right. This is Pure Decking for December the 20th, 1989. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps, and tonight I have RU486, Analog, Big Brother, and Sard. I'm drinking some Sam Adams Chocolate Bock, which wouldn't have been my first choice, but it's actually not bad. What are you guys up to?
Fortunately, just water at the moment. I'm still waiting for the apocalypse to finish.
Well, it's Australian water, which we know is actually made of beer, so...
I have absolutely nothing, because I was running home real quick to get here in time for the show.
I have 151 with Fruit Punch Gatorade.
What?
Wow, that's a
man prepping.
It's
not that bad.
When you have to dip into survival supplies, well. Big, what are you drinking, man?
Bourbon.
Nice. Very nice. So, this is show 100. This is going to be the last show of 2012. And just as a side note, we are going to try to do an end of the world party on the stream tomorrow. We're probably going to kick it off, roughly 5 central. I mean, it's not a firm time. Just kind of when everybody gets here, we're just going to start having some fun on the stream. And I realize that that time, most of the world will have already actually ended, you know, given the way time zones work and all. But I'm a self-centered ass, and that's when it hits my area. So that's when it counts.
Well, I'm living the dream right now, baby, and it's all frogs and fire from the sky.
Are you fighting back the zombies there? So...
Seriously, man, I woke up this morning, went, please be zombies, and went and checked the window. No zombies.
Oh,
damn. Like a kid at Christmas time.
I know, so excited. You know, it's like, yes, kukri, come on, doubles.
You know, I did actually buy a machete today to throw in the bug out bag, just in case. You know, you never know. So, it needs sharpened, something fierce, but, you know, it is at least something.
It'll still cleave something.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like pigs. You put enough force behind them and it'll fly.
So, there you go.
Might not be a great idea, but anyways. So, this is show 100. And holy crap, I'm still doing this.
Yeah.
The show is actually 2 years old. And... I'm fairly certain. I thought it was going to be like all the other ones where we try for about a month and then say, oh, well, that was that.
You going to take some time off over the Christmas break, maybe come back in February or something? Give yourself some downtime?
I don't know that I'm going to take all of January off. I'll probably take the first week or so of it off. I'm not actually sure when I want to come back. And, you know, thinking back on it, show 100, it's interesting, the show numbers, because I have been willing to skip shows if... you know, for one reason or another. I know some podcasts don't do that or shows don't do that. They, you know, the show goes on no matter what, right? So I have been willing to say, well, fuck it, we're just not going to do a show this week. And actually, when I first started out, I was trying to do 2 shows a week, although they were supposed to be shorter shows.
Mm-hmm. So, it's still difficult as all hell to do, as you saw.
Yeah. Yes, it is. So, yeah.
You think about it, man. Some people don't even put 2 years into a relationship.
That's true. There you go, man. Huh? That's something to be proud of, I think.
Yeah, you can put that on your CV next time you're trying to hit a chick up at the bar. I got commitment and staying power, baby.
Yeah, so I run this internet radio station, and I don't see that exactly as being a panty dropper, actually, but...
You're just drinking in the wrong spots.
Oh, well, there you go.
You just got to find the right one, man. They'll come right off.
You tell me where that lines up... Somebody get in the feedback form. Tell me where that line's a panty dropper, because I think it'd be awesome.
You need to go to a 1990s cyber cafe. You tell them that, and they'll be like, I'm so moist.
Well, if they sound like that.
But you wouldn't be sure whether it was swamp ass or vag juice, dude.
Oh.
Does it matter?
Oh. Ouch.
Sorry, I'm lowering the grade of the show already. I just got out of here.
Oh. So, moving on. Swamp ass. Anyways, so I got playing with, I guess, the discussion topic I have for tonight is just how much tracking is actually going on, especially on smartphones. And I got thinking about this because I got an Ingress invite earlier in the week. If anybody's not aware, Ingress is this ARG, which is supposed to be like an alternate reality game, but I think it actually makes more sense to call it an augmented reality game, because you use your cell phone and go to physical locations and then play Capture the Flag. It is essentially cool. GPS captured the flag on the phone. Android only right now. It's in beta. It's come out of Google Labs. But it's this really interesting game. And I got an Ingress invite earlier in the week. And so I played it a little bit. And I haven't gotten to play it as much as I'd like, honestly. But it's pretty interesting. It's kind of like geocaching, except there's nothing physical to find. It's all just like on the phone. But you think about it, the way this thing works, you're connected to their server through your data plan the entire time you're playing. And the game is set up so that you're supposed to have it go on and going so that you can collect, what's it called, XM. But it's points, essentially, so that you can actually do things when you get to the flag points, or the game calls them portals. But so you're essentially letting Google keep an open data connection to your phone, tracking your exact location for use in this game, right?
So at least, well, I mean, it's obviously opt-in, so you're wanting to, you're by turning you're accepting this.
Right, I did, and you know, you actually have to ask for a beta invite right now. So, I mean, I kind of knew what I was getting into, so it didn't bother me too much. But right. It does kind of make you realize just how much. Yeah, you know, just what exactly are they doing with all that data? Because the game is free.
So you would hope they aren't doing anything with it. They're just using it so you can play the game, but we all know that that's probably not true.
No, they've got to be doing something with it, even if it's just improving their maps application or something. But, I mean, you see news stories about it all the time. It seems like just about every app, no matter what your smartphone is, you know, whether you got iOS, Android, BlackBerry, whatever, it seems like all of these apps, in one way or another, are doing some sort of recon on your phone. You know, some are grabbing your contacts list. Some are, you know, using the GPS. A lot of them are looking and seeing what other apps you have installed and reporting it back. The contacts list seems to be the most common one. But I personally know several people who use a smartphone almost instead of a regular computer.
You know, I don't know how they do that.
Well, I mean, for like personally, their Facebooking and
right.
pictures and, you know, I know several who they get on Pinterest on their phone, and that's what they do instead of doing like a Reddit or a Dig or 4chan or whatever. So it's just like, okay, but I mean, several people do it. It's like that's how they do their social networking. They do it all through the phone.
Right, that's what they're saying. Like tablets and smartphones are the device of the future, and desktop computers and all that are going away. But I don't know. Obviously, for power users and people like us, that will never be true. Exactly.
I will never socialize enough to where I'll need a phone. Yeah. it will not happen.
Well, I mean, not even that. Like, would you use a tablet instead? If you could do everything on your computer, would you still use a tablet? I wouldn't, because...
Oh?
You ever try to play a game on a tablet? Like a real game? Not like that stupid Ninja Fruit one where you slice the fruit. It's like real,
actual game, you know? I know this is not BSV's show, but... And he'll probably know it. Where you just tap the phone constantly. There's nothing else but tapping. Like Brick Breaker or some shit.
That's that running app.
Yeah, what is that?
I had some people at work tell me what it was, and I cannot remember what they called it now, but they were obsessed with playing this game. They're just sitting there going nuts on their phones, like in their cubes. It's like, aren't you guys supposed to be working or something?
That's what happened at work this morning. And like the secretary's just sitting there going tap, 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 tap. I'm like, are you nervous or something? What's going on? She's like, oh, this game, it's awesome. I can't stop playing. What do you do?
Well, you just break bricks.
No, it's like you just break bricks with your little finger.
Oh.
And
was that the one that Mole came out with? Mole?
That's it. Yeah, Mole.
Curiosity. That's it.
Yeah, they've got to break like a billion bricks and they'll receive a video or something like that.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yep. Yeah, it's to me, it's just setting people up for OCD, man.
But, okay, So there's that. Now think about what that game could be doing if it's, you know, say, tracking where you are, or maybe what Wi-Fi networks it can see, or your contacts list again. That always seems a popular one. But you know, just a couple other things people don't think about on their phones. The photos you take are often geotagged. Unless the camera doesn't have a GPS or you go in and disable it. But yeah, they're usually geotagged. And most people set up their phones to automatically upload their photos to Facebook or Pinterest or what's the one that was Instagram? Everybody shit their pants over the other day.
I'm curious about this game here that, you know, like I think the major plays it a bit, and I think you are too, Big, playing that game where you set up portals and stuff.
Oh, what Ingress. Happens? Yeah, that's what Morgan was talking about earlier.
Well, yeah, what happens if someone takes a photo of a sensitive installation and puts a portal there?
They don't do the way the game set up. Yeah, the way the game's set up, you can't set up portals. The Niantic project sets them all up, and they're at historical locations or like post offices or something like that,
or landmarks.
Yeah, you could take a photo and you can you can maybe get it approved in like 2 months' time.
Okay.
You don't actually have to be right on top of the location. I mean, if it's someplace where like you could like get into the parking lot and that's close enough, sometimes that'll be fine. But yeah, no, if it's a stupid sensitive location, you can actually report it to them and be like, guys, you need to shut this down. People are trying to break into a prison.
That actually has happened. So. One of the portals they opened up was in the middle of a prison.
Oh, jeez.
Nice.
That sounds kind of neat. Like, I was just thinking, like, if you were in an area and you want new area that you didn't know, kind of wanted to see the town, kind of use that game to take you to some interesting sites and things like that. Is that kind of how it works?
Like, or the post office? Yeah.
Oh well, that's
well,
kind of boring.
Yeah. I mean, I've got some historical locations right in here, and they're all tagged. Like, there's an old Confederate memorial that's been tagged. A couple of the government buildings have been tagged. I mean, things like that. So, I mean, it's not great. I imagine it's better in, like, you know, if you're up in a big city like a New York or a Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know. But the game itself is interesting, but it kind of got me thinking about, you know, just how much tracking is really going on with these devices, and even not just the smartphones, like even your regular computer, the browser, cookies, you know, shit like that. And of course, on the regular computer, it's fairly easy to circumvent it, right? You just grab a live CD or use the Tor bundle or a VM or, you know, a spare laptop or something to kind of set up
even,
a couple.
Not even that, though, dude, because you got to remember, like, referral cookies and links and stuff like that. So, I mean, essentially, you'd have to boot to a live CD every single different website that you went to or clear those out in between. You know, because they can see in a referral link where you're coming from, kind of a form
of
tracking.
That's why you use your neighbor's Wi-Fi.
Well, yeah, of course. But I mean, you're right. It's tracking you regardless.
So it kind of comes down to, you know, one, most people aren't even aware of the amount of tracking goes on, like the geotagged photos thing. How many people do you think even know that?
None that I've spoken to about.
Right.
I mean, we have people we regularly hang out with who are uploading geotech photos to Twitter at one point.
Oh. See, this is something I brought up at work, taking photos of clients and then posting into websites, and the locations are tagged. Yeah. And they had no idea, and they're meant to be running a secure operation for people with disabilities.
That's how they track down... McAfee was here.
Yeah.
He was uploading photos and they had the geotag in them. And so that's one of the ways he got caught and why he's back in the States now.
And if he didn't know, what help did the plebs have?
So, I mean, the only reason I know about this stuff is because I dig into it. It's like, you know, that's my job, right? So, I mean... It's one of those things you just never even think about, that all your JPEGs that you're uploading have the geolocation of where you know, the GPS tag of where you took the damn things on them. And admittedly, there's some neat features with that, like, you know, putting them on a map and I could see some interesting applications taking advantage of that kind of stuff, but you know, you're uploading these things to a public website, so yeah.
It all comes down to people not realizing that information is there, and even if they did, I'm sure you'd still get some people that would say, so?
That's the next question. That's the next logical question. Do you care? And I would imagine most people actually wouldn't. There's some real benefits to having your phone tracked all the time. Like if you give your kids a cell phone and you can track the location all the time, hey, you can find your kids in an emergency. Never minding the fact that so can the government and whatever company issues your cell phones and your tracking software. But, you know, hey, there are some benefits to that. It can help you find the device if it's stolen. Like if somebody steals your phone, takes a bunch of pictures with it, and they all show up in your Facebook feed, you can use that to kind of figure out where they took the pictures. And it can even provide an alibi for you. I mean, way to prove you weren't gonna look. It's like, yep, look, see, here's me in the bar, and the photo's tagged at 3:04 p.m., and the geolocation is 5 miles across town from where the body was found, so it couldn't have been me.
So if you change the internal clock, can you create false alibis for yourself by taking photos and geotagging and stuff?
Well, you'd have to. It depends. I mean, if you say, my phone's set to automatically upload it to Facebook, and it was uploaded, you know, several hours on Facebook's time before the timestamp, you might have a problem. So there's some lineup things, but yeah, I don't. I could see the evidence tampering there.
I'm just saying, man. You know, in all their quests to lock down with rules and shit like that, there are going to be people like you and me who just get the rule book and figure out ways around the rules.
Oh yeah, I mean this. You know, you don't look at this tracking as an invasion of privacy. It's a good chance to lie, right? Yeah. If you're going to do something dumb, leave the phone at home, or even better, have a buddy take it with them to the bar and take a few pictures.
And, seriously, honey, I was not with that skanky whore. Here's me and Bob at the bar at 2 a.m. You know, it was tape. Oh, why is it daylight outside? I don't know. Bright lights? You know,
when you're putting on your costume and leaving the ID cards at home, maybe you got to leave the cell phone there with it. So... But, you know, and if you do, if you're going to be doing something dumb and you don't want to bring the identifiables with you, grab a burner phone and like register it in a false name, right? And just pay cash for the damn thing. So,
or even better, if you're really, really paranoid about this shit, pay a kid to go in and get the phone for you too. So it's absolute plausibility, deniable. Yeah. So you've got absolute deniability about you even buying the phone. Because remember, there are cameras everywhere.
So, I don't know. It's just something to kind of think about and be aware of, that there's a lot of tracking going on, especially in the smartphone area. So,
a lot of it's not opt out either, is it?
No, it's opt out. You can opt out of it if you know to.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the opting out is, you know, opening a support ticket with the company. It's not like a little toggle, you know, in the app.
Becomes a drama.
Yeah, pretty much. It becomes a problem. So, you know, it's just something to be aware of and think about. Do you actually care or not? I mean, at the end of the day, I live in an address, and where I work, at least, you know, with my actual identity, not, you know, the name I use online, but that stuff's all pretty well known anyway. So you're not gaining anything by knowing my location.
It's not about where you have your location is. It's about when you've got to leg it. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like when the shit goes down and you drop and run, leave your phone as well. You've got to have multiple ways of getting up to communicate. And I mean, nothing's better than a $2 for 20 minutes in a crowded shopping mall on an open Skype line.
There you go. So...
I just put a lot of thought into dropping and running, man.
No, it's way too much. It's a valid point, and it's just something to think about, just something to be aware of. I mean, I guess kind of at the end of the day, I mean, I don't like them taking my contacts list. I think that's a bit of a problem. But just as far as reporting the location, I mean, I guess, you know, with all the cookie tracking and all that, I mean, I guess if you like the targeted ads coming at you,
No, dude, I don't, I, I don't. Have you ever thought of that targeted, well, like you said, where like Facebook reports you in that says, you know, oh, you're at this bar across town or something like that. That's an awful idea, because you know what that means? If someone malicious that was friends with you, that tells them right there that you're not at home. So, oh, I can go over to that dude's house. I know he's right across the bar because he just checked in. So now I can go in, break into his house, do whatever, you know?
Oh no, I'll do you one worse.
It's an awful idea.
Okay, let's say Facebook reports that information to your health insurance provider. Well, Mr. Morbus, we see that you go out drinking 5 times a night and therefore you're at a high risk of psoriasis, so we're just going to, you know, or we think your liver's going to fail, so we're just going to cut you off now. But
I see you downloaded the Domino's application for ordering pizzas on your phone there. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing. All that. It's just an awful idea. I don't know why people turn that shit on.
Like I said, it's just something to be aware of. So, moving on here, first story I have for tonight. This is a good story, even though it's only going to be temporary. It's from thejournal.ie. A major international treaty aimed at curbing the trade of counterfeit goods now looks to be all but abandoned after the European Commission abandoned a request that the European Court of Justice examine whether or not it was legal. So once somebody said, hey, can you look at this thing and see if it's legal or not, they dropped it, which you gotta love that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement, ACTA, which has prompted international outcry when news of its impending signature emerged earlier this year after internet users raised concerns that the treaty would impact online privacy and freedom of expression. The treaty would have required internet service providers to disclose a user's details to a copyright holder in cases where the latter had a sufficient claim that their copyright was being abused. So, you know, all those DMCA takedown requests? Yeah, it wouldn't just be letters with threatening, you know, language in them. It would actually be a knock at the door. It's like, you know, hi there, we saw you're sharing a movie. We're going to shoot you now. I mean, but, you know, the IT crowd has this amazing sequence on, you know, it's like, you know, you wouldn't, you know, kill a police officer. You wouldn't shit in his helmet and mail it to his grieving wife. I mean, you know.
Well, you probably wouldn't, but.
Yes, I would.
No, like, you can see this would be good for employment. You could get thousands of new jobs.
So let's see. The story continues on here with more of a, you know, more of an explanation of what ACTA was. We all pretty much know what ACTA was. While member states are still free to adopt the treaty themselves, the lack of EU-wide consensus on the treaty will mean such deals are unlikely, and will also make the treaty largely unenforceable in other countries, such as the U.S. and Japan, where it was also due to be ratified. So, where was it? The president of the European Parliament Socialist Group, Hans Swoboda, said it was about time that the Commission abandoned its hopes to ratify ACTA. It was the best decision because the European Parliament's vote last July had made it a dead end for ACTA, he said. So ACTA has pretty much been dropped. Watch for it to show up again next year where they've changed one letter in the acronym and tried to be a little bit more quiet about it.
Yeah.
So.
Pretty sure this show will keep you informed.
I'll try. But, yeah, so. You know, cause to celebrate, ACT is dead. Then we can move on to the next, you know, four-letter acronym of how they're going to try to censor the internet this week. Next story up, this one's from Torrent Freak. The UK Pirate Party has shut down its pirate pop, blah, 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 not drinking enough. The UK Pirate Party has taken down its popular Pirate Bay pop proxy. While no official statement has yet been released, it is believed that legal threats made by music industry group BPI are behind the unexpected move. The decision comes after a few days after 6 individual Pirate Party members received a letter from BPI solicitors. In addition to taking down the proxy, the Pirate Party has also pulled their Legal Battle fundraiser campaign. After an expensive court action earlier this year, a group of music labels achieved their aim of having the Pirate Bay website blocked by ISPs in the UK. With the official site inaccessible by direct means, many Pirate Bay users switched over to proxy services. With millions of visitors a month, the proxy of the UK Pirate Party soon became one of the most visited websites in the region. The music industry group BPI objected to this alternate route to the Pirate Bay and asked the Pirate Party to take down their proxy service. When it became clear the pirates had no intention of doing so, the BPI decided to send its lawyers after six individual party members last week. The transformed nature of the dispute and the stakes involved, the party members in question were not just fighting for their ideals anymore, but also their personal belongings, facing potential personal bankruptcy through a grinding... Yeah, so they basically picked out members of the Pirate Party and said, great, you're going to pull down this proxy or we're going to sue you.
Wow.
So, well, that's handy.
When you think about it, how much money did the American Actors Guild donate to Barack Obama's re-election campaign? Wasn't it $30 million?
It was quite a good chunk of change.
Yeah. So, yeah, all you celebrity whoremongers out there, it's the celebrities that are the ones going to cost you, you know, $40-$50 a DVD and no longer be able to watch them on the internet for free.
Yeah. And Pirate Bay actually, or Pirate Bay, Torrent Freak actually posted a quick update at the bottom of the story that BPI has confirmed that the Pirate Party proxy will remain offline. So, essentially, the Pirate Party, as a political party, got browbeat by BPI until they relented.
The Pirate Party's losing. They go off tech for a second here. The Pirate Party's actually getting its ass kicked in the political realm right now as the right-wing extremist movements gather more and more momentum. So they're losing a lot of ground to them.
Well, they had a lot of momentum when they first got started, but people don't stay interested in politics very long.
Julian Assange didn't help their cause either.
But, well...
moving, rocket snailing along, sorry.
Yeah... My opinion of Assange as a person is not really that high.
I
respect what he did
night.
With WikiLeaks, but he really comes across as a dick, doesn't he?
Yeah, unfortunately, he's just become the public face of stupidity right now. He's sort of like the new fag, you know, to put it in that way. I can just do what I want. I'm Julian Assange.
Julian Assange, also known as Cartman. let's see. Next story up, this one's from PC Mag. We're actually kind of blazing through these. This one I want to talk about a little bit because I'm not actually sure where I'm coming down on this one. Because it's a slippery slope is what I'm worried about here. New York's Attorney General, it's from PC Mag, New York's Attorney General today announced that 2,100 registered sex offenders have been kicked off various online gaming platforms as part of an effort known as Operation Game Over. Attorney General Eric T. Schneiderman teamed up with Gaia Online, NCSoft Corporation, Funcom, and THQ, and Sony to purge their communities of sex offenders. Earlier this year, the accounts of 3,500 additional offenders were removed from platforms operated by Microsoft, Apple, Blizzard, Electronic Arts, Disney, and Warner Brothers. New York State's Electronic Securing and Targeting of Online Predators Act, E-Stop, really? Wow. The law is called E-Stop.
E-Stop?
Requires convicted sex offenders to register all of their email addresses, screen names, and other internet identities with the state. Schneiderman's office then makes that information available to certain websites so they can make sure that their communities were not being used by predators. Operation Game Over, however, is the first time E-Stop has been applied to online gaming platforms, he said. The internet is the crime scene of the 21st century. Oh my God.
Oh God, really?
The internet is the crime scene of the 21st century, and we must ensure that online video game platforms do not become a digital playground for dangerous predators, Schneiderman said in a statement.
Oh, God, it hurts.
Statement's misspelled, by the way. I copy and paste these stories in. I didn't misspell that there. That means that doing everything possible to block sex offenders from using gaming systems is a vehicle to prey on underage victims. I don't know. Have you listened to some of the underage people on there? I think that's a horrible joke, and I apologize right now. But if you've ever been on Xbox Live...
Faggot!
Your mom!
Since many online gaming platforms let users send messages to other players anonymously, it is unsafe to have convicted offenders use these services, Schneiderman said. He pointed to a 2011 case in which a 19-year-old man met a 12-year-old boy via Xbox Live, gained his trust over a few months, invited him to his home where the young boy was abused. Stats from the Pew, meanwhile, found that 97% of teens play computer, web, portable, or console games, and 27% of teens play games with people they don't know online. So, what they're doing is, I don't actually have that big of a problem with the registered sex offenders having to turn in a list of their email addresses and screen names.
I do.
Well, I mean, that doesn't bug me so much, but then turning it over to all the services and saying, yeah, kick them off. I don't know. I mean, on one hand, I kind of like the idea that they're keeping, you know, pedos from going nuts in the games, and I do apologize for making the joke that some kids on Xbox Live deserved it. That's
I'll dig you.
That's
out of
a
that
horrible
hole,
thing
dude.
To say.
I'll dig you out of that hole. Is there a an award for being molested now for Xbox Live? Is that like a special award?
Oh God.
You know, I'm just wondering.
Achievement unlocked. Yeah. Oh, man.
You lured a child to your house. Achievement unlocked. You know, like, well, there you go.
Okay.
Do you feel as bad now, Morps?
Yes.
Digging you out of a hole there, buddy.
Yeah, I feel horrible now. But if you think about it, what they've got here is the list of people who've committed crimes that are now being punished beyond whatever, you know, jail sentence they already had, right? By saying you can't use these various online services, even though, you know, who knows how long it's been. And my understanding is it's fairly easy to get on the sex offender list, even if what you were arrested for wasn't really, you know, the hardcore predator thing that most people think of.
I mean, if you've just pissed in public and been caught by a cop, you're a sex offender. And there goes your WoW accounts and stuff. Yeah, slippery slope, dude. You know what's next? No, drunk drivers aren't allowed to play Grand Theft Auto or any vehicle-related game, just in case it gives them the simulated act of drinking and driving.
Yeah, I mean that's my real question here: is the state of New York overstepping their bounds by getting all these people kicked off of these online services?
You know what's? I don't see. That's it. It's they just push. You know, you just say the word "sex offender" and nobody can get outraged at it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, see, that's my thing too. I really don't know, because I kind of like the idea of, you know, keeping the kiddie diddlers away from people online,
but it'll be at the end of the day.
It's not really going to do that though. All they have to do is go to Meltmail, and they've got a new email account that no one knows about.
Or you know, but then again, it takes the kid to get out of the house and go over to the pedophile's place to be molested, you know?
Well, and it does raise a very good question of if your kid's sitting there playing Xbox Live and meeting people online, where's the parent in all this? I mean,
mm-hmm.
Analog, you got on us for our characterization of parents on Big Show yesterday. I mean, what do you think, man?
I was waiting for you all to finish before I was going to chime in, but for two steps in this process here need to occur. One, you're correct. The parents need to take the responsibility, need to step up and actually know what their kid is doing. That's one, you know, that overall, you know, parents in general in society today, they do not know. Or A, they don't know, or B, they just don't care. So either or, they need to step up and actually take responsibility. You know, they did the horizontal dance. Two, the second process behind this is I agree completely with this. I think it's a great thing. I think also it would be a deterrent for some people for future crimes. You know, if they knew that this was a possibility of that, you know, they'll lose whatever their outlet is.
But what do you say to those people, like Aryu said, that the guy that was taking a piss in public that got caught, oh, someone's on his wiener, now he's a registered sex offender. Is that really a fair treatment for that guy?
You did the crime, you know. Deal with the consequences.
That's, to me, that's about as absurd as the guy that downloaded 10 songs to his daughter's laptop or whatever and got, you know, raided by the police and fined $10 million or something. The punishment doesn't seem to fit the crime in that case to me.
Well, it's more of a law and order issue and not a sex offender issue there, is it?
Well, I
guess
that's...
Not a sex offender issue, but it's a lewdness issue. Which can be interpreted as, you know, sexually offensive.
Oh, no doubt. And it's just the problem I'm having is they label anything a sex offender and you can't argue against it.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter. Like, oh, we can string him up and gut him because he's a sex offender. Well, what did he actually do? Well, there was 2 o'clock in the morning. He was drunk off his ass. He took a piss down an alley and a cop saw him. There was nobody else around. String him up, he's a sex offender. because they fall under that category. I think it's more of a law and order issue here. And, you know, what about threats of physical violence over Xbox Live and stuff like that? You can't threaten someone with physical violence in the street and not be charged with a crime?
Well, okay, let's try this. Let's take the sex offender part of it out of it. Let's just say you have broken a law and you're now a felon. And they are taking, you know, you've served your time, you know whatever you did. We're keeping the crime vague. And now they're taking away your use of future services beyond. Well, I mean, they already kind of do that, though, don't they? Like, felons aren't supposed to vote. They're not supposed to own guns. They often have guns, but they're not supposed to. So, I mean, is this just kind of the next step of that, of taking away people's rights online because they violated the rights of another at some point in the past?
I don't know.
Yes, why not? I don't have any answers here. I'm just exploring it because I'm kind of with Analog. I kind of agree with that. If they're actually a sex offender, what did he do? He was raping kids. Yeah, no, he doesn't have rights to anything anymore. He should have been executed. But
I think that the laws should be reinterpreted as well, and the label should be redefined. Honestly, going back to Aryu's point there, you know, if it was just a cop that saw him, he wouldn't be labeled as a sex offender. He'd be labeled with indecent exposure and be, you know, placed in jail for drunken, public drunkenness, especially the first offense. But,
well, whatever happened to just letting him sleep it off in the drunk tank?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to get sidetracked there. Am I the only one else hearing music?
When you asked, I'm not hearing any music. I just went and checked the stream. We don't have any of the decks playing. It's just us.
Oh, I must be on something weird then. Oh, there it is. My bad.
You found it.
Sorry.
Had me worried. We had music going in the background during the whole show. We can actually do that, you know. I don't really want to. I think it'd make things harder to understand, but we could do it.
But getting back to it, I don't know. Ongoing punishment is really what we're looking at here. This is not actually a digital thing. It's just an ongoing punishment factor. So it's more a law and order than anything to do with sex offenders.
Right. Yep.
But if we start with the sex offenders because no one can argue against that. And then where do we go? Those who threaten violence to others, you can't really argue against that. Those who commit violence against others, well, you can't really argue against that either. You know, until eventually you whittle it down to those who committed parking offenses. You know, it's just the fear of losing your privilege to enjoy yourself at the end of slave wage day. You know, that's the way I see it anyway. It's if we start having these permanent long-term consequences for the short-term actions, then it's a very, very slippery slope. What's next, you know?
No, that's a fair point. Okay, let's move on here. I think we've really drilled into that one, and I don't know what the answer is, but I just kind of, that one kind of caught me off guard, you know what I mean? Next one up, this one's from CNET. A key patent that Apple successfully used against Samsung in its multi-billion-dollar courtroom brawl earlier this year is at risk following a re-examination by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. All 21 claims of U.S. patent number 7844915, also known as the pinch-to-zoom patent, were rejected by the Patent Office following a re-examination. Samsung pointed this out in a filing to U.S. District Court Judge Lucy Koh in this afternoon. Oh, this thing was written on the 17th, I think, but it looks like they wrote it all that day. Noting it was relevant, given the company's effort for retrieval or retrial, as well as Apple's attempt at an injunction against a number of Samsung devices for infringing on this very patent. Both these efforts were shut down in court orders this week. So in other words, the patent got invalidated, but Apple still won their lawsuit against Samsung. I'm not even going to go with the rest of the story here because it's all examination. Short version, Apple no longer has a patent on the pinch-to-zoom function on the iPads and iPhones.
Hooray.
It shouldn't have been a patent anyway.
Well, obviously the patent office agrees with you because they just invalidated it.
Yeah, I mean, what point do we stop doing this? You know, it, as I said, it started with this slippery slope of, well, it's square and it's flat, looks like mine, copyright infringement, you know, it's...
Well, I honestly don't think we should be patenting software at all, because no, that's sort of like patenting language. It doesn't work.
Right. Or the copyrighting the sound of wind.
Yeah. Yeah. But I still do believe that we should pay for some our software along the line. But not out of the arse like we do now. Like, it's ridiculous. A digital copy costs as much as a physical copy? No.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, one hard drive corruption, I own nothing. Yeah, look at my DVD collection. It's all paid through, you know, blah, 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 downloaded legally and copied, blah, blah, gone.
I have good backups.
Well, we do. Most of us do. But you just think... Well, this along the lines of the same idiots don't realize that their photos are getting geotagged. They're going to be the ones going, oh, you know, I lost $400 worth of movies. That's what I'm thinking anyway.
Actually, you bring up an interesting point with the download only. This actually came up with an iTunes account that had like several thousand dollars worth of music in it. The guy died, and his kids wanted access to the iTunes account because he had this huge collection of like Beatles music and all this other stuff in it. Or maybe it wasn't Beatles, but like this huge music collection. And Apple said, no, it's not transferable. The iTunes account belongs to the person who bought it, and when they're gone, it's gone.
This is going to be court battles of the future, I can see here right now.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Who gets my Steam account when I die? Is that even allowed to be willed to someone?
Well, according to Apple, it's not, but...
you know, like, I'd like, at the end of the day, if I was to die, you guys open the account up and just have whatever games you want out of it, you know?
Yeah.
Or make it accessible to the entire group. Everyone gets access to it.
You know, actually, that gets me thinking. Speaking of backup, has anybody actually looked... I don't know about you guys. I quit looking at Microsoft's included backup tool in Windows back around, Windows 3.1, because it was just a joke.
Yeah, I've never, ever used that, nor do I know... Well, I take that back. I know one person that uses that, and I ridiculed them for it.
Actually, the one included in Windows 7 is not terrible.
See, that's what a lot of people say, and that's the one that he uses, but still, I wouldn't trust it.
I'm trying it right now just to see. The part that intrigued me was the image of your hard drive actually ends up as a VHD, which you can mount in like a virtual machine.
Yeah,
it's like making
say,
a full
disk
image and then doing diffs. So it's like that's a legitimate backup solution. So I'm giving it a shot. I don't know that I'm going to trust it, but I'm trying it. So.
Yeah, there's nothing really on here that I'd worry about backing up. Everything I keep on an external drive. And then copies of that on DVDs.
Now there's the way to do it.
Well, but then, see, I'm getting to that point now where some of the DVDs are getting on in like 5 years. And I'm starting to worry about that. So it's time to start rolling them over. Like, you can't just store your DVDs forever.
Well, if you properly seal them, they'll last for a long time.
Oh, and they do make archival quality DVDs now, too.
Yeah, well, I don't want to pay for that. I'm a
that's the exact thing, is they're significantly more expensive.
At the end of the day, I look at digital stuff in a way that, I had it, it's gone. Deal with it.
Yeah. All right.
Back to the actual store topic, actually, though, since we totally got off topic there. What gets me with Apple and their patents, quote-unquote, that they have, and they're suing Samsung, why aren't they suing all the other people for infringement of these patents? Because all
Samsung,
the other companies are doing them.
Samsung are the only one out there with enough money.
Because Samsung's actually beating them in the market right now. The S3 is outselling the iPhone currently.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. By a lot. And it should. But, kind of go back to the whole patent thing. I don't totally agree that software shouldn't be patented. I think the idea, you know, ideas of software should be patented. Okay, that's fine because I mean it's your idea. You came up with something.
You want to see a scroll bar patented?
You know, I don't think patents should last as long as they do.
That's a fair point.
So, you know, like say I come up with some software, I should be able to have some sort of a patent on it whether it's a utility patent, you know, whatever it is, have some sort of a patent on it for X number of years. Like maybe it's, you know, 2 years, maybe it's 5 years, whatever. It's something small. And then at that point, either A, I have to made improvements on the software to get the patent extended for X number of years again, which would be even less than the first time, or B, I relinquish my rights, and then at that point, you know, anyone else can pick it up to make their improvements on it.
If that was actually followed, that wouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, but, that's not a bad idea, actually.
Yeah. But, you know, we were talking about losing digital assets. This next story is a fun one for that. It's from Sophos.com, the naked security blog on Sophos. The crook who cracked into the email of numerous celebrities, including Scarlett Johansson and Mila Kunis, has been sent to prison. A federal judge in Los Angeles, California, convicted 36-year-old Christopher Chandler of Florida yesterday. Although Chandler has already pleaded guilty, thus sparing the expense and complexity of a trial, he gave up. I mean, all the arguments about we'll prove it and all that other stuff, yeah, he just confessed. So apparently they'd asked for the sentence of just under 6 years. The prosecution asked for a sentence of just under 6 years. Judge Andre hit Chandler with a mammoth 10-year stretch. This dude is going to jail for 10 years for hacking into email accounts.
Explain, he didn't really hack either.
Yeah, exactly. That's the other BS part about that. That goes back to the sentence is not fitting the crime on this. This is ridiculous. There's no way that guy should have gotten 10 years. He shouldn't even have gotten 6 years.
One report says that Chaney drew an over-the-odd sentence because he continued his cracking activities even after he knew he was under investigation. His computer had been seized. As we wrote earlier this year, Chaney's modus operandi seems to have been to use the forgot password feature of his... Yeah, he's guessing the reset questions. He'd then use publicly accessible information, this sort of stuff. Okay, there are guides, like on 4chan, that pop up every once in a while of how to do this crap. So this is like, you know, somebody... This is a beatard.
It's anyways, social engineering is all it is.
Yeah. Chaney stole nude photos, lured text messages, and emails. Many of these were then shared with two online celebrity gossip sites. Interestingly, although Chaney drew a harsh penalty, we haven't heard of anything happening to the gossip sites that willingly went public with the stolen material. So, this dude's going to jail. I'm just going to summarize real quick. Dude's going to jail for 10 years because he stole Scarlett Johansson and Mila Kunis' naked pics.
Don't put yourself naked on any digital device, and it won't get out there.
And the reason that these other sites aren't having anything done with them, because it's news.
Yeah. That's true.
So. Yeah, but nude pictures of Scarlett Johansson's not news, man.
To me it is.
That's right.
But the big thing about that, those stories, like I said, it's... It's totally disproportional crime, in my opinion.
Yeah.
In a way, I agree with that, but in other ways, I think, you know, that people don't understand that what they do, when they do things that are A, immoral, or B, illegal, there are consequences for them. So if you give them a slap on the wrist, you know, type punishment, then... You know, they're like, okay, well, I'll just do that again. Or you'll have somebody else say, oh, well, they didn't have anything, you know, really majorly done to them, so I'll do it. And then so it compounds upon itself. Whereas, you know, people see this guy and he's made an example of, less likely that someone else will do it. I'm not going to say no one will do it, but less likely.
Or just be better at not getting caught.
That too.
So.
I don't know. I don't think that's. I don't think a harsh punishment and longer sentencing deters any sorts of crime. Because most of the time it's opportunity. Nobody goes out, well, no sane person goes out into the community with the idea, oh, I'm going to steal a car today. An opportunist or a car thief. That was a really bad example. I apologize.
Somebody looking for a thrill ride, you know.
But still, like, are you saying that's an opportunity because he saw the dude get out of his car and leave the key, you know, on the seat or something like that, and go out looking for it that day?
Well, right. In all honesty, Madman leaves the keys in the ignition of his car because he just figures nobody's going to steal it because it's a Paseo. So.
Wow, I wouldn't last long around here.
No, I actually asked him about that, and he was like, oh, yeah, no, nobody's going to steal it, and if they do, it's, you know, whatever.
He's got insurance, is what he says.
Yeah,
good luck getting your insurance out when you tell him you've left the keys in it.
No, you just leave that detail out.
Episode 100.
Yeah, because, you know, Madman's such a, you know, unique screen name on the internet. Let's see. Next one up is from Torrent Freak, a leading Australian internet service provider. So apparently somebody RU knows. Because you know all Australians, right?
I do. On first name basis with everyone.
A leading Australian, I'm sorry. A leading Australian internet service provider has pulled out of negotiations to create a warning notice scheme aimed at reducing online privacy. IINet, the ISP that was sued by Hollywood after refusing to help chase down alleged infringers, said that it can't make any progress with rights holders if they don't make their content freely available at a reasonable price. So in other words, he's saying, look, if you guys don't give us a legal alternative, there's no point in pursuing these guys. The ISP adds that holding extra data on customers' habits is inappropriate and is not their responsibility. Right on, uh-huh. This ISP.
Yeah, really.
In many countries around the world, the entertainment industries are attempting to engage internet service providers in their battle against online piracy. The music and movie industries have persuaded some to begin sending warning notices to subscribers, which advise them that their infringing activities have been monitored. In addition to a few less high-profile projects, large-scale schemes are underway in France, New Zealand, and a similar operation about to launch in the United States. Yeah, we've talked about that. In other countries, negotiations have been less fruitful. Australia has become a notable failure after discussions on infringement developed into a parallel legal action against an ISP. The Hollywood-affiliated video industry there thought it could convince a court to hold the ISP IINet responsible for the activities of alleged infringers. It couldn't, because that's sort of like trying to sue the phone company because mobsters were using telephones to plan their heists. Despite the legal action, and that's not even that great of an analogy, but you know what I mean. Despite the legal action, negotiations between right holders and the ISPs, pushed along by the Attorney General's Department, have continued in the hope that an agreement can still be reached, but for IINet, it's the end of the road. The Chief Regulatory Officer at IINet, Steve Dabley, said his company has pulled out of the talks and lays the blame firmly at the feet of entertainment companies. The conversations have failed to move on. The rights holders are still insisting ISPs should perform work on their behalf instead of addressing what we have always said is the root cause of the infringements, the limited accessibility to desirable content at and the discriminatory and high cost of content in Australia. Yeah, so in other words, people pirate the games because they cost twice as much.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, how many times have you heard me go, I'll pick up this game, man. It's only like $5 on Steam. It's 35 for me.
Yeah.
Yep. Several times.
Or, dude, earlier you should today. Play this game, but it's banned in my country.
Right.
You know? Yeah, we still can't play Left 4 Dead 2 because of your censorship issues.
Mm-hmm. He is hoping that gets fixed up after January 1.
But, that'll be nice.
Yeah, we get to wear the big boy pants. Ooh, goody. Gamers are very excited.
But
not now
this
after they're thinking about rolling it back because of the gun thing.
But this ISP is absolutely right. Essentially, the way it works is the content industry comes in and gets ISPs to agree to build the monitoring system, the logging, the detection, all the hard work of all this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just send in notices every once in a while. It's like, oh, yeah, here's an IP and a timestamp. I've actually had to program one of these automated systems for where I work to keep track of all this crap because thanks to the Higher Education Reinvestment Act, I don't get a choice.
I'm wondering how long it is before some of these entertainment providers just start outright buying ISPs so they can police it that way.
Oh, good point.
There's a scary future.
I wouldn't mind some competition in the ISP space in the States. Hell.
Really? You want Walt Disney being your ISP?
No, but I want it to be an option to drive some of the other guys to do better.
I think they would, though. I don't think they would. I think they would band together and be like, hey, guys, if we work together, we can artificially raise the price of this, and we'll be the only game in town.
Yeah.
Yeah, they couldn't really do that. But, well, they could, because most government organized agencies would turn a blind eye to it, you know, because, hell, oil companies don't collude.
Okay, next story. This one's fun. It's from Wired. You really need to follow the link and watch the video on this, because this is cool. The needle drops and a series of high, repetitive whines comes from the album. Then a crackling sound and a muffled guitar riff. Finally, Kurt Cobain's voice, audible but distant and hollow, like he is singing in a tunnel with a scarf over his mouth. It's about the worst version of Smells Like Teen Spirit you could find, but it is awesome at the same time for its totally unique medium. The particular LP is part of the batch of the first records ever to be created on a 3D printer. Somebody's printing LP records on a 3D printer, and they play.
Wow.
Well done. That's sweet. Yeah.
I'm going to quit reading the story because I can explain it better. This thing goes into detail about the printer they used was the Object Connects 500 printer, because it had a very high resolution. And in the video, they're actually talking about how even at that resolution, it's still at about 10 times worse than like a pressed vinyl album. But they show it playing, and after it prints, and it plays.
It's the beginning.
I mean, it sounds like it's coming out of a broken AM radio, to be honest. But I mean, it's still cool that they're playing an LP from a 3D printed record.
Right. Great, man. I can see the future right now. I'm huddled in my ditch listening to copy, like, LPs I bought at the black market, because ISPs are now all run by the entertainment industry and I can't afford to buy the originals.
Actually, kind of reminds me of the first phonograph in terms of sound quality.
Mm. Yeah, good point, man.
Yeah, that's cool. Like I said, it's just a first.
It's an interesting application of 3D printers. It was the first I'd ever heard of anything even remotely like that.
It'll only get better as the resolution gets better.
I don't think
we'll be able to have 3D printers. Copyright and all that.
Yeah. It's kind of funny watching the video, because they're like taking paint scrapers and stuff to these records, saying, oh no, they're durable, it's fine. You're getting them cleaned up so they can play them.
Nice.
But it's great. So, anyways, I highly recommend go watching the video on that. That's really worth watching.
But hang on a minute. So they did Nirvana's Teen Spirit as the first song?
Yeah.
Ever? Oh, fuck. Why?
They've got Daft Punk as well.
No! Go with someone good! Gigi Allen or something like that, you know? Some quality music.
Who?
Well, you gotta think what it was gonna sound like. Dude. I mean, it's like, okay, what song do we want to mangle?
If you'd gone with Gigi Allen, you would not have known the quality was shit. Oh, Big, back me up.
Yeah, he's right. Gigi Allen as the first... Oh, man, that would have been great.
Yep.
Actually, they could have used some Skrillex, and it wouldn't have sounded any different.
You see, it would have terrified a whole new genre of music listeners, with Gigi Allen being the first one. Yeah, I wonder who this Gigi Allen guy is. Oh, God!
I like how much Big sounded like a goblin just then.
That's what Gigi sounded like, man.
Yep.
Yep, a coked out, heroin-addicted goblin.
Gigi was great. If only you could 3D print his shit.
Okay.
So they did more than just
they did several. Teen Spirit. They did several records. That was the first one in the video, though, was the Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yeah, I'm sitting here watching the video, so they're talking about, as far as, like she's talking about Daft Punk's, around the world, and then how when the bass line pops up, that it's so hard hitting, it's causing the needle to skip over certain sections. So,
because it's printed a little bit larger than your average LP.
Right.
So we just need to redesign the record player.
Yeah, no, if they had a record player that was designed for records of that resolution, it'd be fine.
Yeah, we got a record player to go with your records you're printing out, right?
Yeah.
Actually, record players are not terribly complex.
No, they're not.
So that's more feasible than you think. I mean, I know you're saying it to be kind of funny, but...
Yeah, no, but this is definitely a neat idea. I like it.
So now the RIAA is going to be coming after the 3D printers as well. So,
God damn it, Bobby.
I think that might be the second time we've heard "damn it, Bobby" on Pure Decking. So, Joe 100, you heard it here. Anyway, last story up I have, just because it's hilarious. Oh, look, we're already at an hour. Fuck it, we're going long. It's Show 100, damn it. Gizmag.com. It's from gizmag.com. The least surprising news story of the week is surely that California startup named, aptly enough, Sinful Robot, which is working on the first generation of highly immersive adult virtual reality experiences for the forthcoming Oculus Rift virtual reality headset. So the damn thing's not even out yet, and they're already working on the porn.
Wow.
The company has put out a call for 3D programmers, artists, and animators to help develop virtual reality games, which, if the company's promotional art is anything to judge by, players will interact solely with implausibly chested women. I love that line. The Oculus Rift smashed its Kickstarter campaign, blah, 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 blah. Among others, Simple Robot is looking for a 3D character artist and a senior 3D character artist, both of which are required to have expert knowledge of creating realistic female models.
Tits.
So they want a character artist who's been to a lot of strip clubs. With expert knowledge of creating realistic male models, sorry. They don't want males. They only want to make women. So, yeah. Apparently Sinful Robot has had its fill of all you people. Okay, I got it. I started laughing in the middle of the story and lost my place here. The senior character animation position calls for expert knowledge of handling and implementation motion capture data. So they're going to get actual dancers to do the moves through the 3D models. The Oculus Rift isn't even out yet. They're already working on erotic adventure games for it.
So what you're saying, Tuesday afternoon, I can watch nude women on stage without cesarean scars and bullet holes?
That would be awesome.
Nice.
I'm thinking that's about the only application this thing's good for. You know, eventually women are just going to be these ugly things because they've got this preconceived notion of what all sexy women should be like. Thanks to this technology.
I'm just thinking it's going to look like a lot of those bad Flash cartoons that you see on Newgrounds, where it's like, you know, the like my first vector animation. I mean, how much of that shit's going to be out there?
Well, I don't know if anyone here is old enough, maybe Morps, for the first 3D stuff that came out. Remember that big bulky headgear and you had to stand in that ring?
I used to have one of those.
Yeah, yeah.
I had the headgear, I didn't have the ring.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I've still actually got the screens out of it. I keep intending to turn it into a wearable, but time.
Well, is this going to give you the migraine headache like that did after 15 minutes?
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
Cool.
So
you need the virtual reality sickness, though.
Yeah, it's part of the experience, man.
Yeah, it's part of the experience.
It's how you know if you're. It's important because it lets you know that you're still in the computer simulation. So it's like those bad sci-fi shows where it's like you wake up and you're still in the computer. But anyways, I think it's time for this.
Me laugh you a long time.
All right, in Digital Dojo tonight, I really only have one thing I want to talk about, and it's not even really like a tool. It's more of an information gathering technique. I've got a site here. It's privacyrights.org/data-breach. And what this thing is a searchable database of reported data breaches. Now, at first you might think, well, whoop-de-doo, it's in the news, right? Well, it's actually not. There's an amazing amount of data breaches that are listed in this thing, and you can filter it by type, by year, and by what the target was. Like, was it a government office? Was it educational? Was it a business? And by type, I mean, like, was it a hack? Was it credit card fraud? Was it an insider threat? So you can have a lot of fun searching through the list and seeing just what isn't reported, because I've got a bunch on here that you've never heard about that, they're not even that old, but they're not in the news anywhere that I've seen.
Well, Morps, you know, being inspired by that list that you gave me yesterday and taking it one step further with applying alcohol, I found another very good tool for this, for all you social engineers out there. Well, say there is a database that you want to get into or something like that. Go check, see if it's been popped before. Saves you half the amount of time, and then you just go look for it.
The data is already up there. Spin.com, space, and the name of the database. Gotcha.
And I did a few of them. I only had one decent catch, but it wasn't a big thing. But, yeah, there's a list of all the stuff that's already been popped. It saves you the time. Like, I don't know if you were thinking around that lines of it, because I just looked at it as a way of easily abusing things now. Like, all those companies there.
I just looked at it as a starting point. I thought the data was interesting. But you're totally right. I mean, if you want to do Google dorking, or even better, if you know, you can just check and see if you know whatever your target is has already been popped on there.
Yeah.
It's
a really big list.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
But the other thing to keep in mind, this is the stuff that gets reported. Do you know how much doesn't go reported because nobody checks the logs and you don't find out about the breach until the FBI is knocking on your door wanting to know why all the credit cards that have been leaked are coming from your door?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
anybody listening, go pull it down, have a look at it. And yeah, it's mind-blowing.
But I pulled some fun examples here from recent. These are like the last 3 months, right? So the first one is from December 19th. So, yeah, yesterday, the New Jersey Department of Health, over 480 registered medical marijuana patients received an email from the New Jersey Department of Health. The email instructed them not to call New Jersey or the dispensary in Montclair to make an appointment, and the email did not hide the email addresses of the recipients. So what somebody did was, instead of using a mailing list or blind carbon copies, they just put in the to field of the email 480 email addresses of registered medical marijuana patients. Oops.
Nice.
You think maybe the DEA would happen to just love to get the copy of that email? And there's 480 copies of it floating around already, so.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Isn't it? So, and several of them are things like that, where it's not even a hack was occurred, it's somebody screwed up. This next one is from December the 12th. It's from Wilton Brands in Woodbridge, Illinois. Wilton learned that a malicious user was able to view user information between July 19th and October 2nd of 2012. So, yeah, they were in there from July to October. And that it wasn't until October that somebody noticed this crap, and it didn't get reported until December. Something to think about.
Yeah.
The user had added a file to a computer server that hosts Wilton.com and Copco.com. Names, addresses, telephone numbers, and payment card numbers, expiration dates, and security codes may have been accessed. In other words, they don't know. The discovery was made sometime around October 31st, and notifications were sent on December the 10th. So in other words, they noticed it in late October and figured out the guy had stopped before they even noticed it.
Wow.
The malicious user was unable to obtain payment card information between October 2nd and the discovery of the breach October 31st because Wilton changed its payment processing system on October 2nd. Wilton took additional security measures, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, in other words, they didn't catch the guy until they started upgrading the system and went, huh, what's that?
Yeah.
So, again, this is the stuff that gets noticed. Imagine how much doesn't. I'm using this to make a point.
Right. Well, and like you said, it didn't really. I mean, it got noticed by the company, and they sent it out. But how many people besides us in this room and whoever's listening now knows this?
Oh yeah,
we're probably one of the handful of people.
Oh, they probably sent out a notice to anyone who reasonably could have been suspected of having a thing, but it didn't make the news. Now, did it?
Right.
Here's another one. This one's from December the 5th. California Department of Healthcare Services. Names and social security numbers were discovered on the website of the Department of Healthcare Services. People who said, this is a government agency, put all this damn shit on the website. People who sent their information in order to become a provider of in-home supported services may have had their information exposed between November the 5th and November 20th. The issue was discovered on November the 14th and was not fully addressed until November 20th. The list should have only contained provider names, addresses, and provider types. It also contained Social Security numbers that were listed in the column for provider billing numbers. The Social Security numbers were not easily recognizable in this format, but they were still there. Yeah, November the 16th, 2012. This is from Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Allied Insurance. Again, one you didn't hear about. This one's fun, though. A portion of the computer network used by Nationwide Allied Insurance agents was breached by cyber criminals on October the 3rd. The attack was discovered on the same day and contained bullshit. On October 16th, it was determined... On October 16th, it was determined that names, social security numbers, driver's license numbers, date of birth, marital status, gender, occupation, and employer information had been stolen. Affected parties were identified on November 2nd. Yeah. You want to bet this guy was in there a long time before October the 3rd and they just noticed it then? Like, that's when they noticed it, him logging in that day? So...
Yeah, easy, man.
Like... So, you know, the thing is, not only are these things, you know, these are just what's reported, but the point is, I'm willing to bet they're scrubbed.
Mm.
You know, they're cleaned up to make not look as bad. And last one's from November 13th, Chicago Board of Elections Commissions in Chicago, Illinois. So yeah, right around the time of election, you know, sensitive information of Chicago voters was exposed online due to a mistake by the election authority. A database that included names, the last four digits of social, address, and driver's license numbers was accidentally placed online in a publicly accessible place. Only people who applied to work for the board in Chicago polling places on election day were determined to have been affected. A forensic investigation firm believes that as many as 1.7 million registered voters had their names, addresses, and voter registration numbers exposed. Yeah, that's somebody who put it on the wrong folder in their website.
Yeah.
Oops.
I mean, thing is, we're not finding out whether the idiot that did this had any comeback. You know, they lose their job, get counseling, have to have extra training. You know what? What do you do to an employee that accidentally gives out half the school's information?
You know, a lot of times they just bury it. How many times does the employee notice, oops, I put that in the wrong folder. It's already been downloaded, but they don't know that. They just delete it. Okay, problem solved. They don't report it to anybody.
Yeah, I suppose if you can get away with it, eh?
So I find this database fascinating because of all the stuff that does get reported, and just imagine how much doesn't. And just imagine how much are these things cleaned up before they actually get reported out.
Yeah, this could, you could see stock being lost in companies over shit like this.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. Lawsuits.
Just go in there and look at how many just lost laptop and cell phone cases are in there.
I know, I was going through last night. And yeah, it's
for this year.
Yeah. I mean, this is just America. Like, imagine the rest of the world. Imagine if you could compile all the data together on what's being popped. Or what's being accidentally left behind.
So, you want to have something fun to dig through and just, you know, convince yourself that you should be living under a rock and never, you know, have any identifiable numbers online, ever.
And, like, I just hate to think what would happen if I lost my laptop. The amount of sensitive data on there.
Oh, yeah.
If someone got into it or something like that. Damn.
So...
Actually, anyway. Now I'll just go image my hard drive and stick it somewhere. Right? The net.
There you go.
I want to be on that list too.
Run yourself some virtual machines. Do all the private stuff on virtual machines.
Yeah, but then I couldn't be bothered, really.
It is kind of a pain, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, anyways, that's pretty much all I've got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. We just recently got some more music. Our Big's working on getting some more music. We're always looking for new music to add. Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. Nameless Review 7 whenever. The Galaxy 15 radio site and the Twitter handle. Use the feedback form and the shout box. We like feedback. We like knowing what people think. Oh, yeah. And Merry Christmas.
Oh, I hate you, prick.
We'll be back after the new year.
Why'd you have Merry to Christmas. Do that?
You know, it's screw Damn. Your happy holidays bullshit. Screw your politically correct censorship. It's Merry Christmas.
All right, if you're just doing it to upset people, go right ahead.
Only the people who get upset at, you know, if you get upset when somebody says Merry Christmas to you, yeah.
Get bent. That's...
Nice. So, anyways, I'm not actually sure when I'm going to bring the show back. Mid to late January, probably, unless I get the itch. Maybe we'll start sooner. But just keep an eye on the website. We'll keep the website up to date. And with any luck, you won't even notice we were gone.
Someday there'll be a way to win.